Welcome to the Innovation in Compliance Podcast, part of the Compliance Podcast Network. Join us every week as we talk with industry innovators who are making compliance to help business run more efficiently and at the end of the day, more profitably. Here's your host, Tom Fox.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode, and you are in for a Uber treat times three today, because we have the triumvirate of Joe Murphy, Christy Grant Hart, and Kirsten Liston here to talk about their latest book. I can't think of a much more pleasant way to spend a summer afternoon than talking to these three people. So what I'm going to do is ask each one of you all to introduce yourself.
I'm Joe Murphy. I spent 20 years in-house doing corporate compliance work in a company, and then the last few decades consulting and advocating in this field, promoting the field. I currently do some things for STCE on a pro bono basis. I'm the editor of their magazine, and I'm also their director of public policy.
I'm Christy Grant Hart. I am the CEO at Spark Compliance Consulting, which is a consulting and technology company that created Compliance Competitor. I'm a former chief compliance officer and author and speaker.
I'm Kirsten Liston. I was lucky enough to work at a company that Joe Murphy founded, Integrity Interactive. That was where I got to know the compliance industry and learned a lot of what I know about the field. In 2015, I left where I was at the time and started Rethink Compliance. And we focus on training and communication, codes and policies, and advisory services around supporting really strong compliance programs.
And the reason I have this distinguished triumvirate is they have tri-authored the book, The Complete Entrepreneur's Handbook. And if you don't have it yet, we're going to tell you not only where to get it, but why you have to get it. But to start off with, maybe asking you, Joe, what's the genesis of this book and why did you three sit down and put pen to paper, if I can use that old-fashioned phrase?
Well, the genesis was actually an SCCE Compliance and Ethics Institute that was coming up. As I usually do each year, I look to see, what's a topic that no one's covered that would be interesting? And I got the idea of telling people how to go into business in the compliance and ethics field. And then I thought, who do I know who are two entrepreneurs? And that was the easiest part of the whole process. It was just Christy and Kirsten immediately. And I must say, of the things I've done in my career, that was certainly one of the smartest. We had a conference call to discuss this, and I don't know who came up with the idea. I think we all three came up with the same idea at the same time, that this is something we should write about, and we could do a book on this topic. And that's how we came up with the Compliance Entrepreneur's Handbook.
Christy, you are a well-known thought leader in our industry. You have written, spoken, etc., as have I, and both of us have co-authored articles, but I've never tri-authored an article. So I was wondering if you could talk about the process of working with two other people to turn out a book.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, it went better than I anticipated, because a great way to lose friends is to partner with them. So I was really pleased that it went as well as it did. Basically, we took the sections that we had assigned ourselves for the presentation and said, write this out into a book. So we, somebody had the marketing and writing section, somebody had the speaking section, somebody had the, how to raise funds section. Each one of us wrote an original draft of those sections, switched them so that each person made comments on them. And then I did the edit where we put it all together so it had essentially one voice, but you can still pretty clearly hear the dynamics and the interesting stories of each individual person. And that's how it came to be.
Kirsten, when I read your book, I saw this as written for as broad an audience as I can imagine. And I can imagine a pretty broad audience. But I wanted to ask you, who was this book written for? And perhaps has it surprised you with the response in terms of groups that you perhaps didn't think of might utilize this?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll say first off that it was our observation pretty early on that compliance is a fairly entrepreneurial space. It's fairly common for someone to go from in-house like Christy did to being a consultant or a business builder and then sometimes go back in-house afterwards. And we had all taken a version of that journey. And personally, I wish I would have had it when I started this business. So the book is written for anybody who wants to launch something in compliance, whether it's go out on your own as a consultant, raise your profile in the space, or start a business for the long haul. So that's who it's for. And as far as applicability, Yeah, we've already had feedback that it is applicable to anybody who's in a professional services role, not just compliance. And I actually did a book launch interview via an organization called A Mighty Blaze that exists to promote books. And a lot of people, and mostly that's fiction and cookbooks and more literary things, but a number of people who listened read it and said, wow, this applies to me. This applies to me as an author trying to launch my own book. So honestly, for anyone who's trying to get a venture off the ground, I think it could be useful.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And I started a solo law practice on January 1, 2000, and I certainly could have used it for something like that. So I really saw a very broad applicability. But let me take it a deeper level, because I also saw this as a lot of good ideas for an in-house compliance professional to try to expand their brand, not only within our profession, but also if you accept that your customers, when you're a CCO, are your employees. I saw a lot of applicability there. Would that be a fair assessment in your opinion?
Yeah, Tom, that's such an awesome insight. It is true. When you're standing up a compliance program, you're really starting a venture inside your business. Standing up or even, you know, building on a compliance program, you have to think about who's my audience, what do I want, how do I get them to buy what I want them to buy. So that's a great insight. A lot of the same concepts that go into making a great entrepreneur go into building a great compliance program.
Christy, you have started the most recent entrepreneurial endeavor with Spark Consulting, but I was wondering, the format of the book really seemed to me to lay out in a very logical manner all the way through perhaps closing your business out. So I was wondering if you could give us some of the reasons you structured the book the way you did.
Yes, it absolutely follows the journey from beginning to end. I think most people who begin businesses in our field are in-house or are working for some sort of vendor. They're not people who've already started some other type of business. So I think the first question is, how do I transition from here to there? What do I need to prepare? And so the book is structured with, what do I do now? What decisions can I make? What can I prep early? How do I fund this thing? Who do I partner with? How do I make the right choices? And then it goes into the section two, which is the execution, section three, critical marketing and sales. And then section four is exit, which I know Kirsten has a great story that I'm going to tell it for you. One of the accountants you met with said, what's your 5-year plan? And then said, if your plan doesn't include an exit, then it's the wrong plan. You don't have to exit in 5 years, but you should be thinking about making your business ready to sell. And I hadn't known all the details of Joe's spectacular exit with his company. And so I think that that is something entrepreneurs don't think about in the beginning, but that beginning with the end in mind can be really powerful. So it really is meant to give the mindset of, where do I go from here and what's the end goal? So that by the time they're done with the book, they really have an overview of what they need to do to be successful.
So as we mentioned at the start of this podcast, each one of you all has started your own business and been an entrepreneur. So I wanted to maybe change the focus a little bit to your own experiences. And each one of you will answer, I guess, as we work through this, but what made you want to start your own business?
I think for me, I had been at a law firm before I went in-house, and I wanted to be a partner there. And I had the sense of being able to help lots of different people with lots of different problems and how interesting that was. So I never really lost that desire to do that. And consulting on the other side just made more sense because I could do it all over the world instead of one jurisdiction. And that draw was always there.
I'm sorry. I had really started doing compliance work when I first started working in a company. So I had the experience of helping to develop this field right from the very beginning. And being in-house, I realized that what I did was at the disposition of my boss and his boss. So if they wanted me suddenly to go from doing compliance to doing intellectual property, I didn't control that. And I thought for me, it made more sense to follow the field rather than follow the company. And that was my reason for exiting, so that I would have control over what I did. And that it did work out that way, that in practice, I was able to keep at just doing the type of work and the types of things that I wanted to do.
So when I was 30, I was offered the opportunity to start my own law firm, and I turned it down, and I always had a lot of excuses, but here was the reason: I didn't have the courage to do it. And I think that's something that everyone struggles with. And when people ask me, how do you become an entrepreneur? I always start with not only seeing the door open, but walking through it. So I wanted to ask you all, how did you have the courage to do what you did? Because it does take some courage, and I'll be the first to admit it.
Yeah. So I'll say, you know, Tom, the reason I started the business is the same reason why I had the courage to make it happen, which is that there was this super, super clear market need that wasn't getting met, that clients were consistently and persistently asking for, and that, quite frankly, the business I was at wasn't interested in meeting. And I just felt so strongly that it could be done. And that is the thing that gave me the courage. When the market is telling you it wants something, when you've made something you know the market wants, and then you see the market adopting it, the rest of the stuff you have to do is hard. There's a lot to figure out. I'm sure as we go, we'll talk about things like cash flow and advisors and company infrastructure and all that stuff. But in my case, having a really clear, simple conviction that the market wanted something, I knew what that was, and I could build a business that gave it to them, is the same thing that gave me the courage. And quite frankly, even during slow sales times or times when it didn't feel like things were taking off, it gave me the courage to keep going because I knew that demand was there.
Yeah, I think for me, my first book was coming out. And at that moment, I thought there is never going to be a better time to get publicity for this new consulting venture than when a book's coming out. I could do a big launch party in London and, you know, make webinars and blogs and all sorts of things about it and start doing some public speaking. I felt like if I could make my name synonymous with the company name and that there would be a reason to talk about it, that would be such a head start. Because a lot of people, either because they, you know, get fired or the company's acquired or things like that, suddenly find themselves saying, I'm a consultant, and there's not a launching pad for that. So I think the courage came from, if not now, then when, and let's do it.
And I would say for me, in part, it was the same thing that gave me the courage to pursue this book. I knew the people and the person I was going into business with, so I felt confident in them. I felt very confident in the field. And then I'm naturally a relatively conservative person. So although I was a single custodial father with two children, when I left being in-house, I had already put aside their college money. I had money saved for retirement, and I had initially bought a small house to begin with, so my obligations were not that great. I must say that sometimes when I look back in hindsight, I think to myself, what were you thinking? Why did you think this was going to work? But it did.
You know, Joe, that's a great couple of points. And when I talk to some people, I ask them very frank questions. How old are your children? Do you have college paid for? What's the status of your own retirement plan? And certainly at age 30, those were not things that I was thinking about, but those are great points. Now, let me turn to a question I get asked, and I'm sure you all do now, which is, what are the top two or three pieces of advice you give, and then I will give you mine after you all finish. Kirsten, you want to start on that one?
Yeah, I'm happy to start on that one. My top two pieces of advice are, number one, nail down the money. Know how to read a balance sheet. Know how to set up your accounting and set up a balance sheet. You need to make sure that you're selling something for a profit and that profit is reaching you soon enough that you can pay for the work to deliver it. That's number one. And number two, make sure you want to do it. When you're starting something, especially right at the beginning, it is like pushing a boulder uphill. And if you don't wake up excited to do it, if you don't think to yourself, I am going to do whatever it takes to make this happen and come up with whatever creative solutions I need to do to make that happen, if you're not all in, it's going to feel like a slog. But if you are all in, it's the most fun you'll ever have, even when it's hard or tough or challenging. Those are my two, Tom.
Christy?
I think building on that, number one is plan to have a business, which sounds silly, but I think so many people are brilliant technicians. They really understand the law. They understand how programs are, and they're not planning on a business. They're not planning a marketing plan. They're not planning on differentiation. They don't even think about all the legal documents they need to get in place and how to put their website together. And like, owning a business is so different than being great at being a technician that I think that part gets lost in the excitement of, I want to be my own boss. So that's the first thing, is actually planning on owning a company. And the second one is, while you're still in house, you have so much opportunity to get excitement and to show people what you're going to be doing. I didn't expect to be on the pariah end 30 seconds after leaving in house. Now you're suddenly a vendor and I'm uncomfortable with that. The more of that communication I had earlier, I had 6 months notice period. I was in London and literally 6 months to finish doing my job before I could start my company. And it was the best 6 months ever because I had the chance to prepare, to tell everybody. And my first year, we did an analysis and 75% of our clients came from my network. So, you know, until you have the runway to have referrals and enough background that you've got secondary projects from the same client, lining that up as early as possible is the best thing you can do.
Joe?
Well, Tom, I'd like to give some advice first to one group, and that's people who, like me, are introverts. My two colleagues here are extroverts. We had a good discussion about this. But there's a tendency from someone who's an introvert to think, well, I'm not outspoken. I'm not that kind of person. I can't do this. And I want to tell them that that's just completely wrong. And when you say you go into your own business, remember in English, you can be plural. And so in my case, I initially teamed with Kirk Jordan. Our skills were complementary. When we started Integrity Interactive, we had a team of people with different skills. I was very well known in the field through very patient networking. And so I learned to do things that might not be considered characteristic of extroverts, like I like public speaking, but it's a talent, it's a skill that you have to learn. And so I give that advice to introverts. Don't think just because you're an introvert, you can't do this. You just need to team with people who have the complementary skills. And then one quick piece of advice I have for anybody going into business or anybody in business or anybody else is read the Wall Street Journal every day.
Well, I will tell you, first of all, you guys are exponentially past where I was. And my two pieces of advice actually came from one person, Francine McKenna. And Francine told me the following. She said, number one, give yourself a minimum of a year. Whatever it takes, financial resources or whatever you need, it's going to take a minimum of a year. If you open your doors, don't expect anybody to walk through it. And the second she said was, don't be like every lawyer I know, which is to take every piece of work that comes in to make money. If this is what you want to do, focus on that and turn everything else down. Those were great pieces of advice for me. So absolutely.
We write in the book about specializing, and it's such great advice that Francine gave you, because if you just take everything that comes along, who are you to anybody? You're just a lawyer who will take anything. Whereas if you focus, you can become known for something. So that's a great piece of advice.
I now give advice in the podcast world, which is, quote, go niche, go big. So absolutely. So what are some perhaps lessons learned that you might have picked up that lead you to do something different than you did? And you want to just kind of keep with that same order? We seem to have a little rhythm going here. Kirsten, is there anything you might do differently?
Yeah, I think the number one lesson I've learned is you know when something's not working and pull the plug earlier. I've never pulled the plug on something and thought, gosh, I couldn't have done that a second earlier. Typically, you know, whether it's somebody on the team, whether it's a vendor, whatever it is, whether it's an approach or whatever, you know when it's not working. And, you know, when you start a business, you're going to make mistakes. The trick isn't to never make mistakes. It's to recognize when something is off and correct it and then learn from it and hopefully don't repeat the mistake.
Christy?
So for me, I did not come into this with as much financial acumen as I needed. And now it's an absolute passion of mine, finance and understanding money. I would have started an activity that a coach introduced me to in year two, which is running a 12-week ongoing every week updated cash flow analysis. And the theory is if you can spot a problem at the end of month two, you can plan for it, you can shift expenses, you can, you know, whatever you're going to need to do. Or if you have an excess, when can I start this new project that I want to start? Maybe it's sooner. I didn't have visibility into that, and it was kind of day to day. So the thing I would start day one is having that analysis. Where's the money coming in? Where's it going out? What can I do because of that?
Joe?
One thing I wish I had done was set up a more systematic approach to networking and keeping my contacts and keeping information about them and following up. I've always had a very good base of contacts. And in fact, when we got the capital for Integrity Interactive, it was just serendipity. Somebody in the field called me and asked about investing. But I didn't have any systematic way of addressing this. And there's a quote that Kirsten brought to the book, that your network is your net worth. And I think that's a very clever point.
So I'm going to ask kind of a two-part question, which is best and worst. What's the best thing about being an entrepreneur? And what's the worst thing about being an entrepreneur? So Kirsten, once again, do you have a best and worst for us?
I do. Yeah. And they're both sides of the same coin, actually. The very best part is you own it. If you're someone like me who has been in the field for a while, has a strong vision about what you think will work and what you think will serve clients, and believe there's a way to do it. In my background, I was in product strategy, but delivering on product strategy involves client services. It involves marketing. It involves how you position things. It involves sales. So the very best part is being able to take that vision, set it out there in the world, and let the market tell you if you're right or not. And if you're right, it's the best feeling in the world. So that is the very best part. The worst part is you own it. So when times are tough, when people who are on your team look at you and say, what should we do? You're the you who they are asking. So you own it and you have to figure it out and you have to lead the ship and lead the team and get to the right answer. So it's best to own it and be right. It's worst when it's the worst moment. You have to own that too and figure out what's next. But on balance, I love doing it. So it's worth it.
Christy?
I think that the best part for me is really the freedom. We own houses in West Virginia and in California, businesses in the UK, as well as, you know, Atlanta and New York. Like I can work from anywhere. And that whole be your own boss thing is very real for me. And so I think that the freedom to develop strategy, the freedom to do speaking, no one tells me no. You know, when I was in house, it was this constant like, well, maybe once this year and I need to review your slides. And I'm like, I choose this stuff. The worst part, I think, is the emotional roller coaster of it. There's that graphic you sometimes see when it says a day in the life of an entrepreneur and it's like this and like, I'm on top of the world. It's never going to work. And, you know, that stuff is so real. Like, you can have an amazing sales conversation. You're like, I'm fantastic. And then the next, you know, hour, your team member's mad. Somebody calls off sick. You know, a client's unhappy. You're like, oh my God, why? How is this going to happen? That's the part they don't talk about enough. And for me, that is the hardest thing to try to manage.
Joe?
For me, the best part, similar to my colleagues, is the freedom and control over what you do professionally. A bad part is when people treat you like you don't belong because you're a vendor. And in my experience, this, for example, was a fatal mistake made by the original Ethics Officer Association. Vendors were treated as if they didn't belong, as if they were something that we'd accept your money, but don't get too close to us. And I think there's a need to recognize that we're all in the field together and that the vendors are there to add value. They're not some alien or some thief who's trying to steal your money.
So I wholeheartedly agree with that point, Joe. First SCCE conference I went to and the first ECOA conference I went to, the distinction could not have been more dramatic. And that's when it dawned on me, really, that vendors are a part of this discussion and part of this solution. And you're absolutely spot on about that. Now, let me turn to the book itself. And once again, I'll tell everyone, I've read the books. I'm a fan. But what has been the response? Kristen, you talked a little bit about how people perhaps outside your original target audience I picked up on this. I see this as really applicable to a wide variety of areas, but what have each of you seen in terms of the response, either anecdotally or by the numbers?
Yeah, well, I'll leave the numbers to Christy, but I'll say we're hearing, it seems like almost every day, definitely every week on LinkedIn from people who've read the book, who are genuinely excited by it, who are reaching out to us proactively to say, I like it. I want to tell you what I like about it. And like I say, there are people in my network who are not in compliance, but who for various reasons have their own interests in launching ventures, whether it's books or businesses or that kind of thing. And they've been really enthusiastic and complimentary. So we've really appreciated hearing that.
It's been a big success. And frankly, because it's such a niche audience, I didn't even anticipate that it would have the uptake that it has. And Kirsten, Joe, and I have talked about doing a version of this that brings in some other voices from maybe, you know, IT and lawyers and things, and broadening it even to call it the professional services handbook, right? Similar idea, because so much of it is so universal. One of our readers who's at Cisco said her boyfriend read it because he wants to be an entrepreneur in a completely different field and said, this is just so good. It's so helpful. So I think that it will continue to cross over and that that's one of the goals now.
Joe, could I maybe ask you that question with a little bit of twist of the compliance community and the community that you're a thought leader in? Or have you gotten any feedback really from compliance professionals about this book and even those who might even be in-house?
Well, we actually did have one person who read it and wrote a review who made the point that he thought this really was geared toward people in the compliance and ethics field. And so to the extent that we're sending that message to people who are in-house that, hey, you have an alternative. Here's a roadmap for you written from the perspective of a compliance and ethics person. I think that really adds value. And me personally, I think it's important for all compliance people to have confidence and to have a way to stand up for what's right in the company. And one way to do that is to know there is an alternative route. They could go into business for themselves. So in that sense, we're actually helping people in the field because they know they have an alternative, and that helps give them a little more confidence in speaking up on the job.
So before we go to where you can get the book, and I'm sure it's going to be available at most major distributors, I was wondering if anyone wanted to follow up with you guys personally. Could we go through and each of you tell them how would be the best way to contact you? Kirsten, how's the best way to contact you?
The best way, you can find my contact information on the Rethink Compliance website. So if you go to rethinkcompliance.com, and I'm Kirsten at rethinkcompliance.com. So feel free to reach out that way.
Kirsten?
My website for compliance officers is compliancechristie, which is KRISTY.com. And for consulting and information about our broader services, it's sparkcompliance.com.
And Joe?
I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, so it's generally easy to reach me by LinkedIn, or people can contact me at my email. It's a Gmail email. It's jemurphy5730. The only thing I'll say is don't just look for Joe Murphy. There's probably 100 million of us with that name.
Well, I think you may have answered my bonus question, which I was going to put to you all, but will there be a sequel? Or should we just wait for the movie?
Yes, I know. I'm already picking who gets to play me. I think maybe Emma Stone. You got to pick somebody that levels up, right? I think that probably the professional services version is coming. But more than anything, we just enjoy the opportunity to talk to people like you, Tom, and get the message out more broadly. So thank you for the opportunity to be here. And yes, the book is available on Amazon throughout the world. It is also available in bookstores. Typically, it's not yet on the shelves, but if you ask for it, any bookstore in the world, you should be able to have it within one day.
This has been way too much fun. I've enjoyed myself much more than I normally do. So I wanted to thank each one of you guys, one, for coming on this podcast, two, for writing this book, and three, for being such a big part of our community together. So I greatly look forward to seeing what you collectively come up with next.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
If you want to stay up to date on the latest innovations in compliance and help your business run more efficiently, subscribe to this podcast and help spread the word by leaving a review.